There we go, yeah. All right, so first of all, it's great to see everybody. Really, everybody, it's a big surprise.
Can you edit out my coughs later, by the way?
Of course, we can. Okay. It's part of the whole, you know. All right, so we're coming to the holiday of Shavuot. I think it's, we're 12 days away.
Wow.
Yes. So there's a lot of cool Gemaras, you know, Talmudic pieces that talk about, like, what happened. See how the Torah tells us that, and they also, even though the Torah has, like, different descriptions, like a sound and light show, and they saw the sounds, and, you know, it was like a, clearly, you know, one of these, like, one
revelation.
Time, yeah, it's a revelation. It's a beyond, you know, a physical experience. So, but the Gemaras are, like, they bring certain things, elements to it. It's like, for example, from the Pesach, from Passover to Shavuot, it's a 50-day, from the second day till Shavuot, it's 50 days. So you have 50 days, and so it's supposed to be actually a very happy time. What happened though is later on in history, Rabbi Akiva has like 24,000 students.
You can let them.
Okay. So I'm looking at the Gemara. The Gemara says that when Moshe goes up to get the tablets from God, so this is describing going up at the revelation. So it's Gemara in Menachos on 29b. It says that Moshe shows up there and he says to God, he says, when Moses ascended on high, he found the Holy One, blessed be, sitting and tying crowns on the letters of the Torah. So Moses said before God, Master of the universe, who's preventing you from giving the Torah without these additions? God said to him, there is a man who is destined to be born after several generations, Akiva ben Yosef. Rabbi Akiva is his name. He is destined to arrive from each and every thorn of these crowns, mounds upon mounds of halachot. So he's going to look at these little like crowns and he's going to see that there's multiple ideas that can be learned from them. And therefore, I'm sitting here now and doing that, putting them on. It's for his sake that the crowns must be added to the letters of the Torah. Moses said before God, Master of the universe, show him to me. God said to him, return behind you. Moses went and sat at the end of the eighth row of Rabbi Akiva's study hall, and he did not understand what they were saying. Okay, so now stop for a second. Yanki, ready?
Any time travels?
Hold on, yeah, time travel. At what point in Rabbi Akiva's tenure is this happening? Is it before, when he has the 24,000 students, or is it later on when he only has the 5 students? Right? So I'm looking at this Gemara, I'm going, holy cow, if Moshe's sitting in the 8th row, it's got to be a prime time when he's got his 24,000, which is really a wild thing. Meaning, so we're saying that, like, here, God is telling Moses, look, he's going to be this guy, he's going to be a superstar, his name is Rabbi Akiva, he's going to be able to look at the Torah and, like, be able to derive from every little nuance, because that's basically what the crowns are. The nuances of the wording, he's going to be able to learn from these things, many, many things. And that's why we're doing this for him. And then show me where he's, what it's about. And he takes him to this place. It could have been, because what ends up happening is they all die because of the fact that they weren't nice to each other, however we understand that. And so, but when God takes him to Rabbi Akiva's study, he's taking him back to the place where things basically ended up being a failure. Okay? Which is, so, which again, I thought that, like, just looking at it, I said, oh my God, that's crazy. I just noticed that on Shabbos. Okay? So you have this, okay, Rabbi Akiva. And so then what happens next is that he's standing there. Moshe's gets very depressed because he doesn't understand what they're talking about. So Rabbi Akiva arrived at the discussion of one matter. His students said to him, my teacher, from where do you derive this? Rabbi Akiva said to them, it's a halacha transmitted to Moses from Sinai. When Moses heard this, his mind was put at ease, and to this too was part of the Torah that he was to receive. Okay, fine. So basically, here Moshe's like there. He's in the eighth row, means that he's not even Moses, the greatest of all time, isn't even on the front row. He's at the eighth row because he's not even. That's how high level these guys were. And then after this, Moses returned and came before the Holy One, blessed be, and he said before him, Master of the Universe, you have a man as great as this, and yet you still choose to give the Torah through me? Why, God said to him, be silent. His intention arose before me. So this is how it's destined to be, that you're the guy, Moses, who's supposed to get the Torah, yeah?
You know, So why does he show him? Why is he showing these guys who are ultimately going to wipe out?
Okay, so
here's a crowning example of, okay, these guys, we've got 24,000 guys in his learning style. That's novel and incredible. I'll show you that. And by the way, I'm going to wipe them out because they all screw up.
Right, okay, good.
Why use them as an example?
Ask you a different question, okay? So to that question, and what's amazing about this, what the Gemara is really doing is it's parallel to the actual giving of the Torah. Why? Because what happens 40 days after the Torah is given? The Jews sin with the golden calf, right? So the whole thing is a big failure. The Torah then ends up coming to us is on Yom Kippur, right? All those days later, when they're finally, there's atonement, we're forgiven, Moses comes down with the second set of tablets. So the first stab was a total failure. So why do we celebrate the holiday of Shavuot? It was a failure. So why come back and celebrate something that was a complete and utter failure? Right, so it's a great question. So it's the same point. Here, Hashem is showing Moshe. You want to know, there's this Rabbi Akiva guy, and he takes him to this place of 24,000 students, which ended up being a complete failure, also destruction, only to be replaced by, it says in the Gemara, in Yevamos, that Rabbi Akiva it's page 62. It says that Rabbi Akiva, after these guys all died, he picked up. He went down to the south, and he started again.
five students.
Okay, so from the failure, he picks up, starts again, and it says in that Gemara, Yevamos, that from there, everything that we have in the Torah Sheba'al Peh, all the oral tradition, comes from those five students. It's all based all the laws that we have. Something like a little bit.
Water.
I'll do cold. Thanks. Yeah. So it's what's amazing is that first the case that we're taking us Rabbi Akiva. First of all, yeah. Okay.
Why not wipe out Akiva himself? He's the leader of this clusterfuck.
So hold on. So listen. yeah.
Say it. Pardon my French, young man.
Not him.
Hey.
He's a surgeon. He's
heard it before. Us.
Hey, listen.
Sorry.
Okay. No, what's interesting about it is that the Gemara then shows, because that's exactly what I think is going on in the Gemara, because the Gemara then says that Moshe says to him, okay, tell me about this guy, what ends up happening to him, right? And sure enough...
It's also ironic, because his whole thing was having respect for each other is the biggest thing in the world.
Okay.
And his own students didn't do that.
Okay, right. Well, that could be that the reason why that comes out later is because that's at all this stuff at the end is he realizes, you know what? Zeklal got the Viahafilarecha, come on, love your neighbor like yourself. That's what it's all about. And it should have been, but he had to go through all these experiences to get to that conclusion, right? But fine, what's the next part of the Gemara? Moshe says, show me what the story with this, what's his reward? And he takes him there and he says, where is it? Moses went back, he saw that they were weighing Rabbi Akiva's flesh in a butcher shop as Rabbi Akiva was tortured to death by the Romans. Moses said before Hashem, Master of the Universe, this is Torah and this is his reward. God said to him, be silent, this intention arose before me. But in the context of the fact that he showed him the 24,000 student, you know, big, you know, production, and then says, well, that what happened to that guy? Fast forward, he gets destroyed but killed by the Romans in a very not so nice way, right? So when you look at it in that context, meaning that if you realize that the Beit Midrash that he takes him to is the earlier stage one, then maybe that's exactly, even though he was able to rebuild, the ending isn't so good because it's still connected to the original. Okay, I don't feel comfortable saying that, but it's just interesting to see how that.
But God keeps telling him this is the way it's supposed to be.
Right, just be quiet. Like, right, don't like exactly.
Yeah.
But one thing. Kabbalistically, it's it's the last week's parsha.
That what? That.
At the end where it says, I call my answer.
But there'll be a reckoning, or
no? That the reason why Akiva was the reason why the 10...
Oh, I mean, he was part of the 10 that were Harugi and Malchus.
He got the... When the brothers sold Joseph, you need to have a Bezdin of 10. But there were only 9, because Benjamin was home, your father, and you Reuben wasn't there either. So they said that God was number 10. And so the 10 big rabbis that were killed during the destruction, there was one for each, there was one rabbi for each of the 9, and Rabbi Akiva was represented God. So that's why he got the most...
But it also, the issue, so one of the things that goes on here is, like today, become a big thing, like Lag BaOmer. So Lag BaOmer has become more and more, I don't know, 50 years ago was it as big a celebration. Today it's like become a big thing. So what's Lag BaOmer? So two things. One is the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. But the second thing is, it's the Yahrzeit, it's the day that commemorates the life of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the 5 students of Rabbi Akiva from the second, try. Okay? Now, what's amazing about it, so the Gemara in Shabbos 33, which is the Log, tells us a story about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yehuda, there are 5 students of Rabbi Akiva from the second go. One of them is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, which is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Yossi. The 3 of them are sitting around. They say, you know, the Romans, good or bad, you know? And so Rabbi Yehuda says, they're awesome. They built society. They built the whole civilization. They built the roads. They built the bathhouses. They built the bridges. Amazing. Rabbi Yossi doesn't say a word. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, what are you talking about? They did everything for the worst intentions. They did it, you know, they built this. They built the bathhouses for, you know, sexual pleasure. They built the bridges so they can collect taxes. It's all like, you know, bad intentions. Now, what happens? The Romans catch wind. They said, Rabbi Yehuda, they promote him. He's like at a parade, and he's like, you know, he's top. Yossi had to run away because he was quiet. Rabbi Shimon had to go into hiding because they wanted to kill him. So what happens? Eventually, he starts out, actually, it's funny, because he starts out, him and his son, hiding in basements, and his wife would come every day and give him the food, and then they're like, this is going to get dangerous because they're going to come down hard on my wife. She's going to end up breaking, and so we can't trust her anymore, even though she means well. So they went to the cave. They went out and found the cave, didn't tell anybody where they were, and they subsist for 12 years, and all they do is study all day. They come out after 12 years because they find that the message comes to them, the edict's over, they come out, and they're like on fire. And they see people, and anybody that's working, they like burn them. Like you're involved in like the physical realities of this world, and they like look at them, and God comes and says, what are you doing? You're coming out of the cave to destroy my world? Get back in the cave. And they go back in the cave, and they're there for 12 months. Now what's crazy about this thing, you start to say, wait a second, this is Rabbi Shimon, is the Talmud, he's a student of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's story was that his wife, he got married to this woman at the age of 40, who like was from the wealthiest, literally, like, you know, talk about like today it would be, I don't know, like, you know, Bill Gates' daughter, or now Elon Musk, if he had a daughter that was a marriageable age, I think they're all like little kids. We're talking about like marrying one of the wealthiest women in the world, and father disowned them, but she believed in Rabbi Akiva. He then starts learning, and then he compiles, after 12 years of study, 12,000 students. He comes back to see his wife after 12 years, and he overhears her. She had this like really like nasty neighbor who always was like giving her a hard time, and said, your husband's a bum. She says, no, it's amazing what he's doing, and if he would go for another 12 years, I would be the happiest person. So Rabbi Akiva doesn't even go in to say hello. He turns around because he heard his wife say that, and he goes for another 12 years. And in those 12 years, he compiles another 12,000. So that 12 plus 12, he has 24,000 students, and obviously the whole thing goes bad. Rabbi Shimon's life, in a way, you start to see this like parallel between, first he's there for 12, he comes out, not doing good things, and he goes back for 12 months. Okay, so you see the parallel that's being created, but the idea is that when he comes out after the first 12, he didn't get it. He's like, him and his son are like making a mess of things. Get back in the cave. When they come out the second time, though, the Gemara tells us that his son's still on fire, but Rabbi Shimon's moderating already. Okay? He sees his son tries to burn, he fixes it. There's a balance. And then they see this old man running on Friday afternoon with two hadas and two myrtles in his hand. They go, what are you doing? And he says, oh, this is for the honor of Shabbos. Well, why two? He says, one's for remember, and one is to keep. Because it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat and Shamor. Remember Shabbos and keep it or and guard it. So one is for each of those. And Rabbi Shimon was like, wow, this is amazing. Look at the Jewish people, how special God's commandments are to them. Now, going back to the beginning of the Gemara, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon, if you think about what was their argument when they were saying, were the Romans good or not? So Rabbi Huda, actually, they have multiple places in the Talmud where Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon disagree consistently. It's like they always have to say similar arguments about, like, for example, Shabbos. You're not allowed to farm on Shabbos. You're not allowed to make a furrow. So there's this idea. Let's say I want to move the chair from here outside. I'm in the mountains, and I drag it along. I really just want to move the chair from point A to point B, and I might make a furrow. So Rabbi Huda would say, can't do it because I don't care about your intent. I care about what you're doing. Mm. So right, it's all about what the outcome, the outgrowth, right? It's the right, as opposed to Rabbi Shimon says, no, the guy's intent is what matters. He didn't intend to make a furrow. His intention was to take the chair from point A to point B. It's back to our Gemara here. The Romans, I don't care that they built society and incredible, like, you know, their intentions were all negative, right? And so for him, it's all about the intent. So comes back to this thing of where Rabbi Shimon comes out of the cave. First, he's looking at things, and he says, like, he's seeing everything in terms of, well, what are these people doing? They're all involved in, you know, these mundane things. Ah, it's terrible. But then you see he gets back in the cave, he comes back 12 months later, and now he's finally moderating. He's able to see, okay, you know, like this guy, and then, okay, well, why are you doing those myrtle branches? Oh, for the honor of Shabbos? Oh, that's amazing. Like, then you see that he's able to get past whatever he's seeing on the outside. The intent is what matters. And so there's a Gemara in Brachos 35 that Rabbi Shimon actually is having an argument with someone, his name's Rabbi Shmuel, and they're arguing about whether a person should learn all day, study all day, or go out to work. And it's actually a line in the Shema. It says, V'hayam Shema Tishmu, like you listen to the of what God is asking you to do. You do all the mitzvos, and then what will happen is it will rain. They'll get rain, and they'll have a good crop, and then biasafta diganecha. You'll go and you'll bring in the grain. So Rabbi Shmuel says that's a proof that the person, you know, you got to work. You got to. So Rabbi Shimon says, no, that scenario is when you're not doing the will of God, then you're going to have to do that work. But if you really were doing the will of God, everything would be like it would be done for you, which. Today, we kind of like, you know, you press click a button and everything comes to your door, which is kind of cool. Like, maybe, it's like, you know, Rabbi Shimon's like, you know, maybe like, hey, you know, you can.
That's spending the money. It's not that easy to make it.
Right, exactly. We'll get close, you know, like in 20 years, AI, everything will be done for us and we'll just have time to just sit and, you know, contemplate and think and whatever, fine. But you see that Rabbi Shimon has this idea of, you know, pretty intense at the beginning of, like, perhaps when he comes in that Gemara. He's very much, like, you know, very, like, idealistic, let's just say. Later on, there are Gemaras that it's Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Shimon Bar Yochai that, like, if you just say Shema in the morning and night, that is, you fulfill your obligation. And it's like two places I saw, and maybe there are more, I didn't do, like, a full deep search, that Rabbi Yochanan is quoting Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which means that it's later on, because the student quoting his teacher, saying a much more, like, toned down, like, you know, if they just said Shema in the morning and at night, they fulfill their learning obligations. But it's so, like, you see again, like this, at the beginning of his tenure, Rabbi Shimon's extremely intense, and then there's a little bit of a toning down as he gets older and he moderates. So I picked up a book in Israel over, like about, I don't know, this is about Tu B'Shvat, and I found this, there was a person, have you ever heard of the Chabad?
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard about the Chabad 15 years ago, became friendly with a Hasidic guy, Samar, and he would fly to Israel before he made a move. Big real estate guy in Manhattan, and he and his partner got on the plane, went to Israel, and the Chalban, so it means, translates, milkman. He owned a cheese factory in Givatayim, which is in, not in Jerusalem, it's in near Tel Aviv, and clean-shaven guy, and this guy had the ability, he saw things. He was, he first of all, a tremendous, like, learned person, and he had this, like, crazy, he had the ability to understand and see, like, good, bad, future type stuff. But he ends up also in being and so my friend, this guy told me about, like, how he didn't make, and he saved him from, like, the crash of 2007, 2008. Guy told him, like, get out of whatever. Like, really was amazing. But later on, what we found out is that he was a huge, huge Torah scholar. And so I pick up this book, and I'm, like, blown away. It's on Tu Shvat. Beautiful stuff. So I go back, and I find his stuff on the whole Chumash, like, five books. And I start reading that. And it's amazing, amazing, beautiful, just sweet, sweet Torah. In there, he talks about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And he says, you think about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and why he talks to this generation so much more than, and just like gives us hope, is that if his whole thing was about, it's not necessarily what you do per se, although it's important, action is important, but what's going on inside? What are you thinking? What is your, where's your heart? You know, like, what's your intent? That's ultimately where it's at. And so for him, he says, you know what? A Jew is a person who has the best intentions. We always want to do the best that we can do. We want to do the right thing. And so, Rav Shimon, and like at the end of his, like when he went out, it was said that like it was an amazing like blast of like light, because at the end of his life, he revealed the secrets of Torah, the Kabbalistic teachings. There's a lot of, to talk about in that, but. But like the idea of like so the revelation, whatever. But for our purposes and like this time of year, it's like when he like his Yartzeit and Lag BaOmer, like what gets everybody excited? Like there are hundreds of thousands of Jews that go up to his burial site, right? Why are they drawn to him? Because he taught this idea. He expressed this idea of that the special quality of a Jew that deep down, all after every said and done. Well, we always want to do what's right. It's true about, I think, in humanity in general, there's that. But a Jew, even more so, has this ability, has this, like, really, like, deep-seated desire to do, like, good and to be connected to God and all goodness there. And so when you know that that's there, so then, as you know, like that knowing that it's there is, like, the first step to be able to then actualize. One of the, again, just like this is like I'm trying to connect a lot of ideas very quickly. There are these different. There are seven midah in the lower spheres of the ten spheres of the Kabbalistic. Right, there's ten spheres. There's three, which is Chabad. You heard Chabad is like Chabad is Chachma bin Adas, which is about the wisdom, the mind. And then there's the seven lower spheres. Chesed Gvura Tveras Netzach Hod Yisod Malchus. So it's okay. There's seven lower ones. And the seven correspond to the 7 weeks of the Sefirah. And each week has its chesed, and then in there it has seven permutations of chesed. And so when we get to the week of Lag BaOmer, it's Hod. Now Hod means glory. It's associated with Aaron, Moses' brother. Moses is Netzach, which is eternal, and Aaron is Hod. What's Hod? So what made Aaron... besides a lot of different things that made him special, but what at the early stages of our intro to Aaron, Moses is at the burning bush, and Moses is arguing with God, I'm not worthy, back and forth, and then he says basically, translated like loosely, he says, you know, what about my brother Aaron? He's older than me, he's been the leader of the Jews while I've been in Midian away, and now you're telling me that I'm going to be the leader and taking away his power? So he said. So God says to him, not only will he be okay when he sees you, the samach belibo, he'll be so happy in his heart when he sees you. And so that Aaron has this idea, and he's Hod, is the idea of seeing someone live up to their potential.
Right, so happy for you.
Yeah, that he's like really happy, sincerely happy to see someone becoming who they're supposed to become, to live up to their potential. That's Aaron. So that's the meat of Hod. And that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, so he has this aspect of seeing into the, like, what's your intent? And what the Chalban is saying, he sees that every Jew has good intentions, like that's deep-seated, there's the goodness that's there. But also the idea of seeing that we have tremendous potential and having joy, or the Hod Shebahod, it's Hod on steroids, of not just like looking to see the goodness, but also seeing like how we can, our potential and actualization of that, and the joy that we all have when we see people living up for that potential. And that's like what's going on within Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So here we are, we're coming to the time of getting the Torah, which was a colossal failure.
Yeah,
right?
Not entirely.
No, it was a colossal failure. It was. It's okay. Meaning, there was something that is left. The residue of the revelation was amazing. It was awesome. But it was something that was too much for us to handle. Mm-hmm. Just a cool little side bit. It says that the Jews come to Moses and they say, after the second of the Ten Commandments, they're like, enough, we can't handle it direct. You intercede.
And
right? And that's exactly what happens. Moses becomes the interpreter. How do you know that? Because if you look at the text, you'll notice that it goes from first person to third person. The first two of the commandments are God speaking,
right.
And then it shifts to third person.
Okay.
Because now Moses is speaking on behalf of God. And that's where the rabbis pick up on it, because they're looking at the text like, hey, wait a second, it was in first person, now it's in third person. Oh.
Too much.
Something changed. But the point is that you see from these Talmudic teachings is that this, the idea of like, you know, the initial stab at it was in good intention, but there was too much power from God in that case that we didn't have the ability to process. So 40 days later, we're sinning. You have Rabbi Kiva and his students. There's something that was off, that there was too much of whatever it was, that there was too, they were too exact. Think about it. Rabbi Kiva was the guy who could look at, he was looking at the crowns, every little nuance, and he was, so that's like, there, like, you imagine, like, how, they were so precise. When you get too precise,
all trees, no forest.
Right? There's like too much. So then that blew up. So you see that, and then Rabbi Shimon's life also, there was like too much intensity. Not to say intensity, you know, like there's balance. So, but you see that what the point is, that we come back every year, not to the Yom Kippur second giving of the tablets, but we come back to the first and we say, you know what, we're going at it again. And we're trying to understand ourselves better, and we're trying to become better and develop and so, you know what, let's do it again. Let's try this again, God. And through that process, we say, okay, this is an ongoing thing of trying to connect to something that's very hard to connect to. So God gave us a Torah, we study it, we try to develop and understand and continue to like just try to understand what's the meaning of life, what's the meaning of this world, and we sense, you know, like, and as we develop, to sense that there's something bigger that's out there that's created this thing, and the Torah is our way of connecting, and we use that, and it's something that's endless, it's continuous. But so it's like we have to like fall in love with the process, like enjoy the study, enjoy the journey of, and the search, and then constantly looking towards, because as you do that, it's like you're constantly discovering. So we thought we knew yesterday, we thought we knew today, we're like, oh, but okay, but at that moment in time, it was what it was. That's why God takes Moshe to the 24,000 student of Rabbi Kiva, not to the five, because at that moment in time, that was what was important. And so now, fast forward to where we are today, we continue to do this process of working towards, and like the idea is just to continuously like try to understand and search and then grow, and that if we do that, it's like it's this tremendous amount of satisfaction, because as you go through it and you get and you're able to like attain more and more, it gets sweeter and sweeter.
So is the understanding of Torah greater now than it was
It's possible. So this is, you know what's incredible? So like there's this, I'll tell you like this. So if you go to like the classics, there's a lot, like Yanki can tell you, that they'll say, Nitkatnu Adoros, right? They'll say that there's this idea that the further away you get away from Sinai, the lower we go. But the truth is that might not, that if from, I heard from a big rabbi that it's not necessary, there's no real sources for that. And that the reality is that just the same way that when Moshe went to Rabbi Kiva's thing and he was in the eighth row, he didn't understand they were talking about, that most, that all of these people, when they would come back to our generation, they wouldn't even understand the language. Because we, in 50 years, we barely can talk to our kids now. Like, it's like, it's like they're talking, right? It's a different, right? So put that 20 years from now, we're going to be sitting there like, what the, you know, it's just, it's the, that's the
limiting aspect of it.
Correct.
And so if the greatest Torah scholar today were to sit down at a table with Moses and they were to talk, would Moses be blown away by what, like how
you might not
that,
understand
that?
They say they have a joke. I mean, and it's a joke. So the Rambam, Maimonides. And the truth is, if you study Maimonides enough, you realize it's amazing. His the way he formulates and puts everything together, the structure of his, it's incredible. But the joke is that 100 years ago, there was someone called the Brisker Rav, and he studied Rambam, and he would look at Rambam and said, this Rambam doesn't contradict this other one. What he said here doesn't make sense. And then he would come up with solutions. So they said, he gets the Brisker Rav, Rav Chaim, gets up to Shamayim, and he finally meets the Rambam, and he says, when you said such and such and such, you meant that, and the Rambam's like, huh? You know? And then he says, what about that? And he's like, huh? And then the joke is, he goes, what do you want from a Sephardi?
Yeah.
Right? But meaning, he's like, you know, making fun of the like, Sephardic background, but that's, it's like a pejorative. Fine. But the point is that there's some truth to it, meaning what Rav Chaim is coming up with in the 1800s, or 1900s on the Rambam, who wrote his work in 1200s, it's like there's such a progression that, you know, the Rambam doesn't even, what are you talking about?
So it's not necessarily, not necessarily a progression away from Torah, away from
it's
Sinai.
No, the answer is it's really that we, as we're sitting here, we have, the fact that I can sit here, first of all, that I have on my computer all the Torah, and I can click a couple buttons and access everything. Now, it doesn't mean I have command of it,
yes.
Right? But the point is that, you know, we have the ability to see things and, like, then study and, like, be able to put all these different things together and, like, be able to see. I can open up a line in the Chumash, click, and see 200 different opinions as to how to read that line. That's crazy, right? So it means there's so much development that's happened so that, yeah, so we're progressing. It's much harder to put it together. It would have been simpler to have just Rashi and have Rashi tell us everything, right? It'd be like, oh, that's easy. But then Ramban comes and he like stirs it all up, like, and then your head's like spinning.
Rashi
and that's
wrote three different versions before he finally.
Okay, so but the point is that it's like you add another. Okay, here's the Hemek Dover. Like I started like who lived also now more recently, with relatively speaking, and it's amazing stuff. Now Hemek Dover is the Netziv. He saw all of these. You know, he saw Rashi, Ramban, all the other ones, and then he wrote his own, you know, a commentary on the Chumash, and it's like he says amazing things that were never said before. So it's like, you know, I think that we are progressing and that we are, you know, developing and coming up with things, but it's a different challenge, you know. And we have to quote Rav Moshe Weinberger from Eish Kodesh. He says that like we're on a higher level. In the sense that we, if we can just keep it straight with all this information and confusion in the world that we live in, it puts us on a much higher level than any other generation that came before us. It's not easy. This is not an easy. It's not easy times. But it's also there's definitely stuff going on in the world that we're, you know, the fact that the internet, like all this connectivity.
I have an argument with my kids. Like, is it worse today growing up? You know, or when I grew up. I think it was worse for me in the 70s. I think, you know,
it was worse or better?
I think it was worse. It was more challenging because even though today you have a lot more access online, but, you know, school in the 70s, you didn't have, you said if you wanted to have a good time, you didn't have AIDS, you didn't have any of this. And it was much freer society than today. So I think, you know, maybe now it's crazy stuff, but it was just much easier. You know, I think the 60s and 70s were a lot looser than it is today. Today you can see weird garbage on the internet, but I think on a personal level it was much easier.
You're doing more. Who knows?
We had it easier. They have it.
I think it's, you can get into a lot more trouble back then than today.
But it wasn't recordable back then. It was only in your head or your friend's head.
Right.
Now these kids, everything's documented.
It's crazy.
Yeah. To the ninth degree. Right. But to your point, Jonathan, and it goes back to you's question, is you've had a lot more time to sit with it than Moses did. That's the kind of doubt. You know, at the end of the day, Moses had a chance, and they sat there, and they said they wanted to learn. They said to God, okay, we'll take it, and then we'll figure it out, right? Yanki and I just learned this when I was in Kentucky about how the Jews were the last ones to say, we'll take it sight unseen.
Right.
Which,
right.
By the way, was a revelation for me, just so you know, I had never heard that at 52.
Okay.
But you weren't the chosen, were the choosers.
Yeah, exactly. Which I just learned when we were sitting about Shavuos, about this topic. But going back to what you guys were just saying, and I'm not sure what's easier as having all this.
No one's saying that's easy. If anything, I think it's harder.
Information.
Right, that's the point, is that there's so much information. Like in a certain sense, we definitely need to like slow it down, like to be able to like slow things down, and to be able to like, you know, what's interesting is if you open up a Torah scroll, okay, you'll notice that there are separate, like there'll be a paragraph and a space, mm-hmm. paragraph and a space, sometimes longer paragraphs, sometimes bigger spaces, and the idea is that when Moses was receiving it, he had to actually stop, and that's the space. And be able to just, okay, let me go through this. Let me actually process this. And then, okay, now we can move on. So, like, in there, in the structure of this teaching is this understanding. You need to have time just to just, like, you know, no noise. Just let me think about it. And we don't necessarily give ourselves, you know, that time to be able to really, like, stop and say, okay, let me think about that. That's a nice idea, or it's interesting. And to kind of like process it and like let it kind of, you know, come in and then from, you know, so it, but it's, I think it's a big, yeah, it, that the takeaway is for sure that we're in a, it's challenging, but it's also an opportunity. Mm-hmm. There's so much great information. I mean, look, on the internet, I don't know what's true or not. Like, there's like so many things that are like, you know, is that really true? Like, you go on Wiki, like, you know, there's whatever. But in here, in this stuff, it's like, yeah.
My dad used to tell my kids, there's no excuse for not to know anything today, because almost every book, every sefer, every Gemara is written in English. So he goes, yeah. You have no excuses today not to know anything.
Yeah, but so the idea, I think you just like, you know, I think the most important thing is to just learn a little bit every day. Like every, like that was the you know, there's like, what's the most important thing? Like the, it's like, v'hafa, love your neighbor like yourself. One of the ideas is like the idea of a carbon tamid, the sacrifice that was brought every day. Because the idea of like being tamid, of like of consistency, of just every single day doing a little bit, like this idea of like, you know, a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night, taking a little of that time, and just like, you know, you have this incredible, it's an amazing resource of like thousands of years of Jewish wisdom. That is accessible to us, like just to like stop and like take a half hour, an hour a day. Like it was amazing today. I was yesterday sitting at a table in Denver, Colorado, and there was the people who hosted us, and they invited two families over, and these two guys both learned Daf Yomi. You know, they're learning, and I'm also, and we were discussing, because all three of us were learning the same. It was really pretty amazing. Like, think about that. Mm. But the idea of like being able to like take the time to like have whatever it is to like half hour a day, and just whatever that subject that speaks to you. There's so many different things that, and take on to do it with someone else. Maybe to have a study partner it's a game changer, because it just like you're accessing this. We're so advanced in whatever we do in our secular lives. Where like, you know, whatever, you know, we are on the Jewish Torah learning Psy, we're like still like in kindergarten or first or second grade, and like that's the biggest mistake was that our, like I feel like it never was like told to us, hey, guess what? When you get to 50, you should be on a 50-year-old level of this as well. Like I worked with a guy, an Israeli guy, he's a brilliant guy, went to MIT, he was the CEO of the company, and he had a sixth grade, he went to Hebrew school in sixth grade in Brazil, so he had a Jewish education at sixth grade. And then he'd start with me, and I'm like, Ofer, like, you're brilliant, but you're on the sixth grade level. Like, I went to, like, 12th or a little bit further, so whatever you challenge me on, I'll squash you. And like, but the idea is that we have to go to that next level. You know, we're sophisticated people. Let's look at our Jewish, you know, knowledge base and try to get there as well. So I guarantee you that.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm just saying
it's hard to find. You know, it's really hard to.
So you make time.
I know.
You have it.
But you know, some of us need more sleep than you.
Wait, do you sleep at all? Ever?
I don't know, but that's, no, I do. I get it.
But how many hours anymore? I only sleep like 6 hours a night.
Right. So that's what this. Listen, there's time for 20 minutes a day. That's all. I'm not trying.
And you should also exercise 20 minutes a day. You should also be nice to your wife 20 minutes.